Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection, to the opening arguments, to the witness testimony and cross-examination, and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Last week, I was sitting on my in-law's porch in coastal Georgia, watching the rain and wind and lightning pummel the beach in front of us. It was part of Tropical Storm Elsa, and as we were watching it, my husband and I started talking about the strength of this storm, about the likelihood of more, about the heat that was roasting the Pacific Northwest and Colorado and California. And I wanted to know whether all these extreme events were caused by climate change. It's a natural question, but it's also what climate scientists like Daniel Swain think is the wrong one.
My reaction to the question of did climate change cause this, say, extreme weather event of some kind in some specific place is actually frustration with the way the question is being framed.
Swain studies the intersection of climate and weather at UCLA. And he says that when you pose the question the way I did, you almost always get a preordained no, because no one thing causes any one weather event.
And so the real answer, I think, that people are looking for is actually to the slightly different question of, did climate change affect the likelihood or the severity of the thing I just experienced?
And the answer to that, lately, is yes.
It's not like California has never seen wildfires before, or the West has never seen drought before, or New York City has never seen summer thunderstorms and downpours before. The question really is a matter of degrees, literally.
Today on the show, Daniel teaches us how to ask the right questions about climate change, to understand our reality, and maybe even find a little optimism in this summer of extreme weather gloom. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for parole violators, Stan. And world peace.
Okay, we get it. World peace might seem like a pipe dream. But what if I told you it's not? 2024 will see more than 50 elections around the world. And in some places, peace is actually on the ballot. One reason is because countries in Europe and Latin America have been experimenting with this thing called feminist foreign policy. Because right now, the way that we wage war and peace, it's kind of a boys' club. The new season of Things That Go Boom from Inkstick Media and PRX is coming March 18th. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
In thinking about the past few weeks, we've just been inundated with heat. The heat dome, heat emergencies, marine die-offs. Is there anything about this summer that feels different to you?
I would say yes. This year, globally, really shouldn't have been an extraordinarily hot year, at least in recent terms, because this is a La Nina year, which essentially means that the water temperatures in the eastern tropics were significantly below average, which usually means the U.S. and the world in general are a little bit cooler on an annual basis than they otherwise would have been. We're not seeing that this year. In fact, this is tracking to be one of the warmest years on record globally, and we just experienced the hottest June on record across global land areas. But I think closer to home, in the United States, and in particular in the Western U.S., this has just been a really miserable start to summer, where many, many places have experienced not just the hottest temperature on record for the date, but the hottest temperature that these locations have ever recorded, in many cases, in over a century of record keeping.
These two things are happening simultaneously. These big spikes in local temperatures, what we refer to as weather, and then the overall warming, climate. And the point of asking the right questions is understanding how they come together. All of this makes me think about this question of weather versus climate. We started by talking about the connections between the two, and I wonder what you would say is the more helpful way to think about the differences and the relationships between weather and climate.
So really the way I increasingly like to think about it is that climate is weather in aggregate, if you will. It's not individual weather events necessarily, but if you scale up and look at a lot of different individual weather events across time and space, that's what climate is. And climate change, in a lot of cases, is important, not so much because of the linear incremental trend. No human or ecosystem will ever experience the global mean temperature, for example. We talk a lot about it, 1.5 degrees of warming, 2 degrees of warming targets. But those aren't important unto themselves. They're important because they're an indicator of what the weather and other Earth systems are doing. So I like to live a little dangerously and mix my weather and my climate intentionally, but deliberately and cautiously. You know, one of my roles is to sort of bridge that temporal and spatial gap and talk about extreme weather in the context of long-term climate change.
What's the risk in sort of thinking of weather and climate separately, of staying with that framing?
Well, I think there's a couple of key problems if we maintain some really strict separation between weather and climate, as had been the case for a while historically. One of the biggest gaps in public perception, especially in the US surrounding climate change, is that it isn't affecting me or me as the individual. There's actually a lot of broad societal recognition that climate change is real and is a problem. So correctly, people on average across the political spectrum actually realize this. But what's really interesting is that far fewer people believe that climate change is affecting them personally. And I think that's probably because for a long time, folks were hearing just sort of this climate change and this nebulous abstract future sense, rather than actually the climate has already changed in ways that are tangible outside your window, but no one's really describing it or quantifying it.
Some of Daniel's work does just this, quantifies the effects a warming planet may have had on extreme weather. It's called extreme event attribution. Scientists build mathematical models to show two scenarios, extreme weather with climate change and without.
Essentially, what we do is ask, well, let's assume for a moment that climate change had no influence on any of these events at all.
So there's a forest fire and it's just a forest fire.
Yeah, there's a forest fire or there's a heat wave and it's just a heat wave. And there's no contribution from climate change. We set up these intentional self-imposed strawman kind of arguments known as the null hypothesis for the purpose of essentially demonstrating that if we then have enough evidence to reject that null hypothesis, to disprove the straw man, if you will, then that's sort of the basis for the attribution statement that climate change did, in fact, beyond all reasonable doubt, affect this particular extreme weather event.
An example of this just happened in the past few weeks. A group of 27 climate scientists analyzed the recent heat wave in the Pacific Northwest and published research saying it would have been virtually impossible without climate change.
That's a classic example in general. And it's a classic example partly because the most clearly attributable physical event type are extreme heat waves. The reason for that is that it's directly a question of temperature. So sometimes we'll be talking about other kinds of events, you know, heavy downpours or hurricanes that are related to temperature, but you're actually still trying to quantify something that is not directly temperature itself. Temperature can influence the amount of rainfall or the strength of a hurricane, but not directly. In the case of heat waves, it's just a matter in a lot of cases of quantifying how much worse the heat wave was made or how much more likely the heat wave was made by climate change.
You run this weather blog that looks at California, and I wonder when you look at the temperatures on there and the wildfires on there, I mean, I just took a quick scroll through them. Is there anything on there now that isn't influenced by climate change?
It's an interesting philosophical question, because if you took whatever was happening in the globe right now and then just added a fraction of a degree of temperature change in either direction, warming or cooling, so just 0.05 degrees to every location on Earth right now, you would fundamentally alter what the weather patterns on Earth would be a couple of weeks from now. One way of thinking about that is because climate change, global warming, has already detectably influenced the climate, at least at a minimum, through rising temperatures everywhere on Earth, then in a certain sense, every weather event is influenced by climate change in some way. Now, it doesn't always mean that it's in the same direction. Some of these may be more like the butterfly effect, where you're adding the ripple on the pond and it's evolving differently than it would have otherwise. And so what extreme event attribution is really doing is trying to discern those systematic changes from those more random perturbations. We're not seeing more extreme cold waves, for example, globally, but we are seeing more extreme heat waves. When it comes to extreme downpours, for example, even in places where precipitation isn't increasing on average, we're seeing more of these intense bursts of precipitation. So some things are not necessarily changing in a systematic way, but other things are. And sort of being able to discern which is sort of at the heart of extreme event attribution.
When we come back, where Daniel finds a little hope in all of this bleak news.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
This is What Next TBD. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and I'm talking with Daniel Swain, a climate scientist at UCLA. When you listen to someone like Daniel, it can be disheartening. You can get lost in the overall gloomy picture and wonder if it's too late. And that is exactly the attitude Daniel does not want you to have, despite all the difficult news he and other climate scientists have to deliver.
It's kind of like being an oncologist where you only really get to give the bad news. You never get to say that the great news, the cancer's in remission. You always have to say, no, it's still getting worse, just like we thought before. So on some level, that's actually a pretty depressing position to be in, to be constantly delivering bad news. But on the other hand, and this was the subject actually of a recent essay by a climate scientist, Adam Sobel, who pointed out that it is actually really important to be talking about regional climate change and extreme events in a climate context, precisely because those are the things that we might actually be able to adapt to some extent or build resilience to. And we really need to understand them and quantify them if we're going to do that. Because, okay, if you're actually trying to prevent harm from happening to people or to ecosystems, what do you do with the knowledge that, we've seen 1.3 degrees Celsius of global mean warming? What does that actually tell you as a city planner or an emergency manager? It doesn't really tell you anything, right? But if you know that in a particular place that you're going to be more likely to see hurricane storm surges that are higher than the seawall, or if you're an emergency manager in Portland, Oregon, or Vancouver, British Columbia, places where generally it doesn't get very hot, or there's not a lot of local resilience to truly extreme heat, that you are going to start to see events like the one that we just experienced on a more regular basis. That's actually really actionable information.
There are other links in this chain that need to be fixed too, where binary thinking has got to be tossed out and better questions need to be asked. Take the past few weeks. If you look at Colorado, headlines about the heat dominated the local news.
Get ready for the return of triple digits. The brutal heat brings with it higher fire danger.
We're talking record-breaking heat here, and we're not done with that just yet. Heading into tomorrow, those temperatures are going to be breaking the record pretty likely.
So just how hot is too hot for our dogs?
But very few made the connection to climate change. One Colorado reporter found only 6 stories in 150 even mentioned it. Drawing those connections can help illustrate the reality that we are all living in and help people take local steps while politicians wrangle about the bigger picture.
We still have to solve the underlying problem of global warming, though. So oftentimes this will be framed in terms of, do we need to mitigate climate change? Do we need to bring climate change to a halt by bringing our carbon emissions to zero? Or do we just need to adapt? And of course, I think you probably can predict where I'm going with this. It's not an either or question. It's an and situation where we need to be aggressively working to solve the underlying problem of climate change by bringing emissions rapidly to zero. And then also in the meantime, because there already has been harmful warming and there will be further harmful warming before we solve the underlying problem, we also need to be doing that adaptation. It's kind of this interesting place where the big macro questions, we kind of know what we need to know. We know that global warming is real, that we're causing it, and that it's a big problem. But on the local level, the details are still uncertain, yet really important.
So what do you think of a broad stroke measure like the European Commission's plan? They just said, we're going to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases by 55% by 2030. compared to 1990 levels. That is a big political lift, but that's one of those kind of macro strokes that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the only way we're going to solve this is through increasingly grand macro strokes. I mean, that's just the scale of the problem. It's not a problem that can be addressed at the local level. It gets harder and harder to implement large changes in society if you have to do it very fast versus slowly. We're kind of losing the opportunity to do some of these things slowly now because we still haven't really bent the carbon curve in any meaningful way as of 2021. We still can. The good news is we are still in control of the climate system. And it is always remarkable to me the degree to which the science suggests that's still the case. Once we pull the plug on carbon emissions, we will stabilize the climate pretty quickly. That's the good news. But we haven't done that yet. It's not that we're on a runaway train where the brakes don't work. We're just on this train that's careening downhill. The brakes are perfectly fine, but the conductor's just deciding not to use them.
I've been listening to you talk, and you are so thoughtful and measured and sort of considered in everything you say. How are you not screaming all the time?
Well, maybe I am on the inside. I hearken back to the, I believe it was the Japanese theme park advisement during COVID to please scream on the inside rather than expelling your lung contents into the air around other people on the roller coaster. But I think that as a scientist, I have a personal fascination with the system. So if this were just some, you know, some microcosm existing in isolation that didn't affect people or ecosystems, then it would just be really fascinating to watch this evolve in a Petri dish, right? The problem is it's us. This is our world. These are our lives that we're talking about. It's actually this constant tension between being interested in what's happening intellectually as a scientist and being horrified by what that means for the world that we all inhabit. I'm constantly talking about all of this. It's sort of all-consuming, actually. And so it's not just a matter of the public communication and speaking to folks like you and to journalists, but it's also a matter of having these conversations with policymakers and people who are actually implementing or should be implementing the kinds of changes that we need to see. And so I guess that this is our way of screaming.
Daniel Swain, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation today.
Daniel Swain is a climate scientist at UCLA, and he runs the blog Weather West. That is our show for today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks, and we're edited by Tori Bosch and Allison Benedict. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family and is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. If you want to learn a little bit more about how we got to where we are in the climate crisis, I recommend listening to Tuesday's episode of What Next, which is all about how Exxon gets its way. Mary Harris will be back next week. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.